Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the draft itself. Now, the first round of the 2019 NFL draft, I thought, was pretty weird. In fact, it was really weird. Not weird because Kyler Murray went to Arizona with the first overall pick. That's not weird. In fact, that's pretty great. That makes sense. I will get to that in a moment. Overall, I thought it was your typical draft. Usual draft. Trades were made. Names were called. Awkward. Commissioner hugs were doled out. Speaking of which, I think that Raj can pretty much dial it down now. I mean, back in the day, it was sort of cool for a minute or two, like the first time it happened. We're at the point right now where we have to put Raj's hugs on the clock. I know you're looking for all the good PR you can get, but this is not about you and your choreographed embraces. Raj, it's about the teams. It's about the players. Just stand there, ignore the boos, and try not to butcher anybody's name. And just be grateful, my man, that Christian Wilkins did not put you in concussion protocol when he hit the stage.
He can hop down and do the splits. He can
look out!
Commissioner went to self-preservation mode right there for a minute, but this guy,
my man is very lucky he's not in the protocol. But in terms of weird, how weird was it to start the draft off by awarding season tickets for the next 100 years to some lucky fan? Like, hey, everybody, welcome to Nashville. The 2019 NFL draft is finally here. After months and months of buildup, anticipation, finally, all eyes are on Nashville. Are you ready to do this? Are you? Because we're not. Not until we do this all-important sweepstakes and giveaway. Man, how whack was that? I don't want to say it took all the energy out of the show, but that took all the damn energy out of the show. I mean, damn, Raj, any deets about that all-important bake sale that you want to share before you start? How's that silent auction for the Commissioner for a Day package going? The whole thing was so weird. All that excitement, all that momentum about the draft, about who Arizona was going to take. Way to wreck the buzz. But then, after giving away free tickets for like the next 1,000 years, Raj finally stepped back to the mic and got around to doing this.
With the first pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select Kyler Murray, quarterback, Oklahoma.
Oh man, that's a great look. Love that look last night, that pink suit. So after all the drama and all the mystery, would they go with a quarterback? Would they go on the D-line? What would they do with Josh Rosen? Is Kyler Murray the guy for them? And ultimately, the answer is yes, Kyler Murray is the guy for them. And I love that pick. I love that pick. That's a big brass swing. I mean, think about this for a minute. How insane is it that Kyler Murray is going to play for Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona? It's brilliant. I love it. But if I hop back in the time machine and we went back even only one year, and I said to you, 1 year from now, Kyler Murray, who has not started a college game, is going to be the first pick in the NFL draft by the Arizona Cardinals, and he's going to play for Cliff Kingsbury. You probably would have told me I was high. Or that was the worst lava-spewing hot take artist that anybody could ever be. And that I should never be let near another microphone or camera ever again. But in fact, it actually did go down. And when it did go down, nobody was surprised by that because it does make total sense. Murray shredded opposing defenses. He tore up college football in the 1 year that he did have the rock in his hand. He's got a crazy skill set. He's going to a coach with a system that suits him beautifully. It's a great fit. You ask me, that's a great pick. So, as weird as the top of the draft was, that top pick was not weird at all. Neither was it weird that Frisco took Joey Bosa at number 2, or that the Jets took Quinnen Williams at number 3. But then, things did get weird again. Now, you know I love weird. Weird is good, normally.
Let's get weird.
But not when the Raiders are on the clock. Then weird is not good, because as we all know, Raiders gonna Raider, and they did. Right here.
With the fourth pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Oakland Raiders select Cleveland Farrell, defensive end, Clemson.
So with every kind of option in front of them, they went with Cleveland Farrell from Clemson. And the reaction shot from Raider fan was some of the best ever. There was that guy in the RN for life hat that looked like he smelled something terrible. And then looked around like, is anybody else seeing this? My guy looked like he was about to puke in his own mouth. Then there was this fan with the Raider flag who was like, huh? Who? Is that good? Yeah, well, okay. Woo! These are Raider fans standing outside in the rain, waiting to hear the pick, and they're way too confused to even be pissed. Damn, Raider Mike knows more about the Raiders roster and the draft board than Chunk Gruden and Mike Mayock will ever know. And even Raider Mike has no idea what the hell those two were thinking when they reached for that pick. And neither did the four Raider fans that were in that empty sports bar in Vegas that ESPN cut away to. And by the way, ESPN, why the hell do you keep cutting away to empty sports bars during your coverage? Like, I knew that was going to be a near impossible production for all of us to sit through last night, but even for you, ESPN, that was unwatchable. Cutting away to empty sports bars. But back to the pick. Then you've got the guy himself, Farrell. He was asked about being the fourth pick overall, and he started his answer with, and I quote, I would be lying to you if I said I wasn't surprised, end quote. The guy himself said, I'd be lying to you if I said that I was not surprised. Now, that is hilarious. Dude's like, I've got no idea what they were thinking. You have to ask them. Hell no, I didn't think I'd go fourth overall. I mean, don't get it twisted.
Laugh
I'm not going to give back any of that money. But they do know they could have traded down, banked some additional assets, and got me lower, right? They know that, right? Yeah, like them taking Farrell fourth was a huge surprise. But nobody was more surprised than Farrell himself. Look, I'm not saying the guy's not good. He is. He's good. In fact, he's really good. He can get to the quarterback, and the Raiders need somebody who can get to the quarterback. Then again, they had somebody who could get to the quarterback, Khalil Mack. And this dude is not Khalil Mack. And reaching for him with the fourth pick overall is not going to make anybody forget that you traded away one of your best defensive players ever in his prime. In fact, reaching for this pick only ensures that nobody's ever going to let you forget that. I mean, the truth about the draft is it's nearly impossible to evaluate. It takes years. You can't seriously sit here a few hours later and say, who did great, who did horribly? Anybody who does that right now is probably just guessing. But here is a stone cold lock for you about the Raiders in that first pick. Something that every last one of you can take to the bank. I guarantee the following about the Raiders' first of their three picks. If it's good, John Gruden made it. If it's bad, John Gruden did not make it.
Hindsight, 50-50.
After all, the mantra going to the draft was, don't mess it up, dude. I took a lot of slings to get you three first-round picks. So, if Farrell can play, Gruden is a genius. If he can't, Mayock will take a lot of slings and a lot of bus tires with John Gruden at the wheel. And then when that happens, Mayock and Reggie McKenzie will be slinging beers, talking about what an a-hole Chunky is, and speculating who the next fall guy is going
to
be.
You have to ask Reggie.
And Mike. Charles Davis. Charles, good to have you back. How are you?
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me, Jim. Trust you are well.
My man, good to have you. So you are a University of Tennessee legend. What was it like to be back in the great state of Tennessee covering the draft?
Well, you know I'm a legend in my own mind, and I try to embellish it and burnish it at every opportunity, but it was terrific to be back in the Volunteer State. Wonderful to be in Nashville, even though the University of Tennessee is in Knoxville. And last night I went ahead and represented, Jim. I put on the orange and white tie, the cufflinks, the whole deal, and let everybody know I was a volunteer because we run that state.
Good man. It's a great look, too. I understand that it can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or you're running late or you find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train and the signals are going and the train's not even there yet. So you feel tempted. You want to try and sneak across the tracks. That would be the worst idea ever. Don't do it. Trains are going a lot faster than you expect them to be. They cannot stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it could take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is simply a crushed hunk of metal, and what used to be you. Well, better not to think about that. Let's not go there. The point is, you cannot know how quickly the train is going to arrive. The train can't stop even if it does see you. The result is an utter disaster. So, if the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you need to remember just one thing. You need to stop because trains cannot. We're talking to Charles Davis. Now, there had been some talk before the final few days leading up to the draft that Arizona might actually go defense with that number one pick. Ultimately, they take Kyler Murray. Was there any surprise on your part that that's the direction they went?
Zero. I was kind of getting a kick out of the whole idea that they might do anything but take Kyler Murray. And the only reason I say that, and it's real easy to say now, Jim, okay? So I understand that. It's real easy to say now. I think I was pretty clear in the weeks running up to the draft that my surprise would have been off the charts if Kyler Murray wasn't the pick. Because once you hire Cliff Kingsbury as your head coach, and he doesn't immediately rush to Josh Rosen's side and embrace him, and Kyler Murray's, you know, available, forget it. It's done. You know? I mean, if there was a chance that they wanted to do something else, there would have been a lot better interaction, I think, between Cliff Kingsbury, Josh Rosen, the Cardinals organization, and how they were planning on doing things. That message seemed to be fairly clear, even though they kept trying to tell us, hey, Josh, he's doing great. He's this. It just never seemed to be cohesive. So it would have been a stunner to me if Kyler Murray wasn't the guy.
Charles Davis joining us. I agree with you. So what do you do then with Josh Rosen? I mean, do you trade him right now and get whatever you can get for him? Do you keep him as a backup? And if he is a backup, what happens in the event that he were to outplay Murray?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the last part. I don't see how you can keep him, period. Because that possibility is real. Josh Rosen was the number 10 pick in the draft last year. He's not the grandpappy veteran that's hanging around to mentor the young kid. He's going into a second year in the league and wanting to be on the field and really ticked off for the second year in a row. Last year ticked off because he was the fourth quarterback taken. This year ticked off because they took a quarterback when he's already standing there. You really think that he's going to want to be in that room? You know, it won't be personal with Kyler Murray. They've known each other since Elite 11 in high school. But at the same time, really? You're going to have Josh Rosen sitting back there? Because you can have the competition all you want. But the new guy that just got drafted, he's like the champ now, isn't he, Jim? You got to knock him out.
Right.
You can't play him to a decision. And they really are not going to want that. So my surprise is that the trade didn't happen previously. I think Arizona got I'm not going to say caught, but I think that they felt like they could get something more for Josh Rosen. And I think everyone else waited them out. And now I think their leverage is way reduced. You know, the idea that he was going to get a fetch of one was a tough ask to begin with. I think last night, if they'd done it during the draft, they could have gotten a two and maybe some more. I don't know what they're going to get at this stage. And I just can't imagine the two of them in a quarterback room for a long time coexisting. It's like Troy Aikman and when they brought in Steve Walsh. You think Troy was real thrilled? I don't see how that works.
Not at all. I don't see how that would work. I don't think that would be a healthy environment at all. Charles Davis joining us. So if you still need a quarterback, Charles, right now, and you're looking at possibilities, what would you rather have? Would you rather have Drew Lock in the second round, or would you rather make that trade for Josh Rosen, especially since you might be able to get him for pennies on the dollar?
Yeah, there's the point, Jim. I think you nailed that one because he already has a fifth-year option in hand because he's a first-rounder last year. I think it's, what, a $6.2 million deal, you know, when it's all said and done. And a guy who played 13 games last year in the NFL already and showed if you give him a chance, he can throw the football pretty well. But that offensive line last year was abysmal. I mean, he took some shots. And one thing I did take from last year, Jim, that was a question for Josh Rosen coming in, toughness and what would he do when the going got tough. I had him against the Rams late. I don't know if you remember that game. Aaron Donald had four sacks.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like 40. and the kid took a pretty good battering. I was saying, get him out. He's your franchise quarterback. He wouldn't let him take him out. He kept standing there and firing until they finally went and got him, you know, against his protestation. So he showed me something in that game, but I would think very hard about trying to acquire Josh Rosen before I would draft a rookie.
We are talking to Charles Davis for a few more moments. All right, so let me skip ahead. The Raiders at number four, Charles, they take Cleveland Farrell, and that was a surprise to just about everybody, including Farrell himself. What do you make of that pick?
Yeah, when I look at that one, that was one of those that announced that even though it's John Gruden's second year, with Mike Mayock now as the GM, it's really kind of year one. You know how college coaches, that first year that they take over a job, they call it year zero to kind of buy themselves extra time?
Sure.
Because of the previous regime, it almost felt like year zero for John Gruden. Here's your reset, and don't worry about going flashy. Make sure you hit a solid double into the gap. Go to second base, stand up, and play from there. Because Cleveland Farrell's a heck of a good football player. But I don't know how many people saw him as that dynamic, double-digit sack guy each and every year. But when I sat and thought about it, here's the thing. Farrell can play himself into that. And you remember this, Jim? When Joey Bosa came out, what was the one thing people did say when they had a question about it? I don't know if he's twitchy enough, and I don't know if he'll get me double-digit sacks. That myth has been laid to rest. Maybe Cleveland Farrell could do the exact same thing. But every other box you've got with that kid, you check it off because he's about as quality as you're going to get.
I think, Charles, he's a really good player. I don't know that they need to get him where they got him, that maybe they couldn't trade down and get him. But then you get to number six, right, where things get really weird with the Giants taking Daniel Jones. What did you make of that pick?
Well, I've been saying for a long time, and remember, I'm just one voice, right? Coach Gettleman and the Giants aren't asking me, but – if you're going to take a quarterback in that first round, don't wait till 17 because the guy you target may not be there and teams may come up and get those quarterbacks anyway. So if you have conviction on a guy you want, you better get him at six. My conviction was Dwayne Haskins. But again, I'm not part of the Giants organization. They must have had conviction that Daniel Jones was their guy and they didn't want to play chicken with the idea of going and saying, okay, maybe I can trade back up later, or I can get him at 17, or I can do all that. It looks like it could have, but they don't know that. It's kind of like Ryan Pace a few years ago when he really wanted Mitchell Trubisky. He probably could have stayed at three and gotten him, right? But he didn't want a chance at someone jumping him. So he made the trade with San Francisco to get to two to ensure that he got his guy. To me, the Giants must have rated Daniel Jones as their guy, and that's why they took him at six. You got a conviction on a player. Is he the same guy at 17 as he is at 6? Yeah, but the optics are just different because Gettleman's got big shoulders. He's willing to bear that burden.
Charles, one thought about that. I mean, you're right. If that's the guy and that's the guy you're targeting, you want to make sure you get that guy. But it's not even that in a vacuum, right? Because the Giants passed on Sam Darnold last year. They picked Jones this year. They also decided not to trade for Rosen, who probably would have cost a whole hell of a lot less than the sixth pick. So it would seem like they think that Jones is better than Darnold and Rosen. So how much pressure is there on Jones?
There's a ton of pressure on Jones. And I think that I don't know this for a fact, Jim, because I'm not in those rooms. But I would guess that the Giants felt it out, you know, sounded it out with the Cardinals. I mean, it would be it's hard for me to believe that they wouldn't have checked. And my guess is that the Cardinals' asking price was really high because they, you know, my guys Peter Schrager and Ian Rappaport both reported last night that the Cardinals are telling people we're not giving them away for 60 cents on the dollar. Well, guess what? People are like, well, I'm not paying full dollar for them. What do you got? And they decided not to do it. That's why I think the Giants stuck at six and took Daniel Jones. But to your point, this move this year will tell us about taking Saquon Barkley last year. Because I love Barkley. I think he's a generational type running back. And he's going to, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a guy we'll talk about for a long time. But without a quarterback in this league, his best years could be wasted. So Daniel Jones will either validate the pick last year, Barkley, instead of a quarterback, or we'll still be talking about it down the road.
All right, so really quickly before I let you go, what are the teams and players that you're keeping an eye on for the second round tonight?
Well, look, I'm still keeping an eye on Green Bay, even though they got a couple picks in the first round. We keep talking about these are Aaron Rodgers, you know, swan song years, even though these quarterbacks look like they're going to play till 50. What help will they give him? And he needs help in the offensive line. probably needs a receiver that you can count on, and there's going to be a run on receivers here in the second round. Guys we saw in the first round was like DK Metcalf, A.J. Brown. They didn't go. So there's going to be a big run on receivers here, but I think offensive line, a guy like Juwan Taylor, another guy like Cody Ford, neither one of them went last night. Both of them would be prime targets for Green Bay to try and surround Aaron Rodgers with some guys to keep him upright. So that's a team I'm really taking a close look at in this round.
He is an NFL Network analyst. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at CFD22 for analysis like this. And remember to watch Charles Davis on NFL Network's live coverage of rounds 2 and 3 of the 2019 NFL Draft beginning tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. Charles, you crushed it. Really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Jim, for having me back on. You take care of yourself.
Let me talk to you about Johnny O. In fact, if you saw my TV show on CBS Sports Network today, you saw me rocking a Johnny O shirt. Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. It is the hidden button between the second and third button, and it's featured on all Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up and you're not too unbuttoned. You see, the hidden button solves the age-old second button dilemma. Should you button one or should you button two? Every Johnny O shirt comes with the patented tweener button, so you're always going to look just right. It is a total game changer. I know why my man Johnny O jumped on that. And now you use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout. That's through May 30th. That's 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. Amazing looking shirts. And shipping is free for orders over $85. johnny-o.com, promo code ROME, and get 20% off your first order. And remember, free shipping on orders over $85. Go to johnny-o.com for your tweener shirt, 20% off, and check out the wide selection of shirts and other products ranging from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. johnny-o.com. Now, in the weeks leading up to the draft, Giants GM Dave Gettleman told anybody who would listen that the team was not going to reach for a quarterback. When he wasn't taking runs at Odell or pretending that Eli Manning was Benjamin Button or reminding people that he had been to 7 Super Bowls and he knows what a championship team looks like, tastes like, and smells like, Gettleman was dropping fire like this. Quote, "I'm just telling you, I'm not going to force a pick. You can't draft for need. You'll get screwed every time." I mean, so hammering away at that point. And then when it comes time to pick, he goes out and he does this.
"With the 6th pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Daniel Jones, quarterback, Duke."
Uh-oh! No sooner than that announcement was made, Giants Nation does this. No! And there's always going to be that knee-jerk reaction. But if you want a taste of the instant reaction to the pick, just take a peep at some of the headlines. Like this one from the New York Post. Quote, "Giants' Daniel Jones pick is an utter disaster on so many levels." Or how about this lead from the Daily News? Quote, "There are mock drafts, and then there is this Giants draft. The mocked draft." And then this tweet from NJ.com, quote, "WT actual F. Local sports channel SNY kept a camera on former NFLer Ray Lucas. He's an analyst. When the pick went down, here was his reaction."
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
My man's rolling around the bullpen, just laughing. Oh my God, that's hysterical. And the national media was not much better or much nicer. Check out the real-time reaction from Yahoo Sports NFL Draft Show when that pick came in.
"They have made their pick, and we've been talking about whether they would go defense or get a quarterback, and they have gone with Daniel Jones."
No! Right now, with the 6th pick in the NFL draft.
With the 6th pick in the NFL draft, this is real life.
Hey, we love who we love, huh?
Wow. Oh!
There it is, guys.
Man, Gettleman must know something that nobody else knows because everybody else hates that pick. I could spend the next 3 hours just playing reaction videos of people losing their freaking minds over that Daniel Jones pick. Hell, the instant reaction from inside MetLife Stadium was equally incredible.
2019 NFL Draft. The New York Giants select Daniel Jones.
Oh!
So that's just a taste. Like I said, the next person I find who liked that pick will be the first. Literally nobody not named Gettleman likes that pick. But after picking Jones as sixth, Clemson defensive lineman Trevor Lawrence at 17, and then moving back into the first to get Georgia corner DeAndre Baker at 30, Gettleman sat down behind a live mic and acted like he just cleaned the hell up.
It's a wonderful thing when need and values match. You know, we're thrilled to get Daniel. He was up there with everybody else on our board in terms of value. And he is just perfect for us. We really think he's gonna. We really believe in this kid, and we really believe he's gonna be a real quality quarterback for us. For our franchise.
Quote, it's a wonderful thing when need and value match. Damn, Dave, glad you think so. Because the way the rest of the world is reacting, they may as well be burning Manhattan to the ground. I mean, the draft fell perfectly for the Giants. Sack monster, Josh Allen, available. Touchdown pass monster, Dwayne Haskins, available. And then when it was the Giants' turn to pick, they went out and they used that sixth pick overall on the seventh leading passer in the ACC. Sixth overall on the seventh leading passer in the ACC. And every explanation that Gettleman gave sounded worse than the one before it. Like when he was asked when he knew that Jones was his guy.
It's important that you see quarterbacks play. It watching them on tape is one thing. But seeing them in the environment is definitely I think very important. So Daniel, Drew, Jared Stidham, Minshew, McSorley. I mean, all these guys were at the Senior Bowl. So I decided to stay. And frankly, Jordan, he walked out there, and I saw a professional quarterback after the three series that I watched. I saw a professional quarterback. So that's when I was in full bloom love.
That's quite a visual.
So he was in full bloom love. So he's basing that pick on what he saw in the Senior Bowl. Like three series and some exhibition game. But the Giants social media team, they love that. They took that quote and they ran with it, posting on Twitter, quote, Daniel Jones was the MVP this year at the Senior Bowl. These highlights are a big reason why. Only the highlights they linked to were not anywhere near as good as the highlights from the replies to that tweet. There were all the angry GIFs. There was the Dave Gettleman clown face. There was the Photoshop of a Pornhub headline accusing the GM of some X-rated behavior. Then there were the 300 Giants fans who pointed out that the last two Senior Bowl MVPs who were drafted by the quarterbacks by the Giants to play quarterback were Davis Webb, who Gettleman cut, and he probably should have cut Kyle LaLetta after he went Dukes of Hazzard with his car on a New Jersey police officer. The Senior Bowl did not much help those guys become good NFL quarterbacks, just like it didn't help E.J. Manuel, Christian Ponder, Pat White, or Charlie Fry. Those dudes all were Senior Bowl MVPs too. Hey, look, Daniel Jones may turn out to be a good starting quarterback. He might even turn out to be a great starting quarterback. He could be everything that Gettleman described him to be. But for DG's sake, he better be. Because again, I can't find anybody, anywhere, not named Gettleman, who likes that pick. And you know why? Because Jones completed less than 60% of his passes in college. Because Jones has less than great arm strength. Because Jones lost his last regular season game 59-7 to Wake Forest. And Gettleman still picked him over Dwayne Haskins. Still picked him instead of trading a lesser pick to Arizona for Josh Rosen. Now you tell me, who would you rather have, Jones or Rosen? Or why didn't they wait and take Jones with their second pick in the first round? Like, Gettleman is the first to remind everybody that he is the smartest guy in every room. He better be, because nobody's ever going to let this dude off the hook if he isn't right about this. Not when the Giants had the number two pick in last year's draft. A draft with more quarterback talent than maybe any other in the last 35 years, and they took a running back. Not when Josh Rosen is out there on the clearance rack after the Cardinals took Kyler Murray. And not after he told everybody that he would not reach for a quarterback based on need and then made a move that basically screamed, we reach for a quarterback based on need. The Giants better hope they found their quarterback of the future. Otherwise, they're going to be looking for a GM of the future sooner than later, no matter how smart he thinks he is or how many times he reminds everybody of all the rings he's won. Hey, Giants fans, are you pissed about that pick? Are you pissed about that pick? Because if you are, you should be.
I was in full bloom love.
Daniel Jones.
That's quite a visual.
Brandon Tierney is my guest. Brandon, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, always good to be back on with the legend. How you doing, buddy?
It's good to have you, man. Really good to have you. All right, so you're in Nashville for the draft. Before we get into a particular pick that took place at number six, and I've got to get your thoughts on that. Overall, what is that scene like? What's it been like for you?
Listen, let's start throwing up the petition, make this thing happen every year in Nashville. This place is phenomenal. Listen, you've been everywhere, Jim, and you go to certain cities, and, you know, they're kind of happy to have you, and, you know, there's a little civic pride, and obviously it bolsters the community and financially and all that stuff, but Nashville, this should be the new home of the NFL draft every single season. It's vibrant, it's cool. The logistics of the city are perfect. This place has been popping. It's been a grand slam. 500-foot bomb almost out of the stadium. How's that for a description, Jim?
I like it. I like it a lot. You know, nothing ever lives up to the hype, but that town does. That is a great, great town. All right, so in terms of the draft itself, the Cardinals take Kyler Murray. Not a big surprise.
Nope.
But, Brandon, when you look at Josh Rosen and how he handled the physical beating that he took last year, then all the scrutiny after the season, what do you make of Rosen right now?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a Rosen believer. I believe in Josh, and I like Josh. And I think that Josh, arguably, Jim, was probably put in one of the worst situations of any quarterback maybe in the last 20 years. And, you know, I'm sure to some listening to the show, oh, that's for death. It's incredibly hyperbolic. And it's not really when you actually start cutting up what they had. Their offensive line was deplorably bad, horrendous. They had a completely unimaginative offensive scheme. If there even was a scheme, I'm not even sure that there was. They may have hit the tunnel and said, all right, you know what? Let's try this the first series. They were lost. And then you throw the fact that the coach, who was given 1 year, was, you know, and I'm not trying to bury him, but he was just woefully miscast. He was not ready to tackle that kind of a job with that kind of with that magnitude here. And then you factor in no explosive players for Rosen to work with. But I tell you this, go to YouTube, all right, go to YouTube and just type in the play when Earl Thomas got hurt. That throw on that touchdown by Josh Rosen was, I believe, Jim, a foreshadow into his future. It was low enough where the safety can't hop over and tip it. It was over the linebacker, or I should say the converging nickel. It was a big league throw. Josh might need a little rehabilitation. Josh Rosen's going to be good. Josh Rosen could play.
Brandon Tierney joining us. All right, Brandon, of course, you're based in New York, so let's talk about the Jets for a minute. They took Sam Darnold with that first pick last year. They gave Quinnen Williams with their first pick this year. What did you make of that pick?
Home run. There was a lot of chatter, obviously, and this kind of broke late. Our buddy Jason Lockenfour, who I know you have on the show all the time, JLC is awesome. He was reporting that there was some movement. Well, you know, maybe the Jets are engaging with the Bills, and they might swap and jump down to 9, and at that point maybe go O-line or best available defender, whatever it might be. They were obviously trying to get out of there. I was hoping that they would make a deal with the Redskins because, let's face it, the Redskins are inherently clueless, and that's the kind of team you prey on, a team that's desperate. You know, they want Haskins, and you could probably ask for the moon and probably get it because if you believe the report, Snyder stepped in and took over the first round, at least a good chunk of the war room here. What the Jets did was phenomenal. Now the Jets have a star at every single level. Front line, Williams. Second line, Mosley. They get him from the Ravens. Third line, Jamal Adams. Absolute stud. But what happens here, Jim, when you finally have a quarterback, you have, I said this with Tiki yesterday, you have war room clarity. You don't go in there hoping, reaching, thinking, imagining, you know, posturing. It's like, no. We've got our guy for the next 10, 12, 13 years, maybe more. Now let's go and attack the draft with sensibility and a clear conscience because we're not chasing the quarterback. The Jets are about to get good. The Jets are about to get very good, and the Jets are about to get very good very fast.
Brandon Tierney joining me. You know, I would agree with you. It seems to me when you look at the Jets, they do not have the best history in the draft, especially when it comes to taking quarterbacks. But when you look at how they've handled their first-round picks in the last few years, it seems like they've got a plan, and they're working their plan. But what about the Raiders, Brandon? What was your reaction to their pick at number four?
Like everybody else, Jim, I was surprised for sure. You know, but I do think if you know John, and you certainly do, and you know John's tendencies and what John gravitates toward in terms of player profile, he doesn't want to mess around with rookies who are going to have a steep learning curve. He wants, you know, certainly veterans. Just look at the quarterbacks he's deployed outside of Carr. Rich Gannon goes there, wins the MVP. We love Rich. He's part of the crew here at CBS. Rich was rehabilitated, but he was a veteran. You know, Brad Johnson, all the history of Gruden, and we'll see what happens ultimately with Derek Carr. But I believe the pick at four, while it's questionable, it taps into the profile. Smart, a leader, a sage young man, a great presence. He's not going to wander emotionally. Now, is his upside like some of the others? I don't know. Josh Allen could be a 13-sack beast who's also able to drop into coverage and 15, 20 yards downfield if he has to hang with a tight end. So I don't know that it's the perfect pick. Matter of fact, I would certainly submit that it's not. But it's a sensible pick for what the Raiders do. And I like the rest of their draft. And let's face it, I mean, this is go time for the Raiders. You've got three first-round picks. You've got a ton of draft equity. You've got Vegas on tap. You got to start making it happen. And I actually think last night was a really good step in the right direction.
I do like the rest of their draft. I think, obviously, they could get this guy a little bit lower than where they got him. But I do like the rest of their draft. But, Brandon, then you've got the Giants picking at number six. Now, we all know it's impossible to evaluate a pick a few hours after it's made. But when you have the chance of grabbing somebody like Josh Allen or Ed Oliver, what do you make of the decision to go with Duke quarterback Daniel Jones?
I think the Giants are a clown show right now is what I think. And that's not to disparage Daniel Jones, because that point that you just made, Jim, while everybody seems to forget that when they're nine Bud Lights in and they're cheering for somebody or booing they've never seen play a snap, we all know those visions, those images on TV. The bottom line is that their plan is sloppy. What the Giants should have done, and I've been saying this, listen, you watch Tiki and Tierney, you listen to Tiki and Tierney, you follow me on social media, I've been saying this for months. Trade for Josh Rosen. Get him in the building. At number six, take the best available defensive player, Oliver, Allen, whomever. There's going to be somebody there for you, and he's going to be good. And then at 17, either trade out, okay, or take the best available offensive lineman. And there were a lot of good first round. There's going to be some good offensive linemen today as well that they could have snagged at 17. And then you look up, and if they would have followed that plan, you would have had the quarterback of the future. You already had the running back of the now and the future and a defensive stud of the future. Jim, that's three foundational pieces that can really accelerate the rebuild. The problem is, you're right, half the Giants fans clamoring for somebody else, they never watched Daniel Jones play one snap. And they don't know, for the most part, that the Duke receivers can't run, that they're limited, that their hands were bad. That's why the sub-60% completion percentage jumps off the screen, because his guys didn't handle the football. And that's on them, not on Daniel Jones. But the fact remains, they could have, if they were really smart and savvy and on the money, they could have actually taken 17, maybe jumped up a few spots in front of the Redskins at 15, because you know they wanted Haskins or a quarterback, and monitor what Miami was doing. We thought they might take a quarterback. They didn't. And get Daniel Jones, at 11, 12, or 13, or 14, not at number six. Listen, it's the draft. The kid could be a Hall of Famer, or the kid could be Dave Brown, which obviously is the complete antithesis of a Hall of Famer, Dave Brown from Duke, ironically. It's not that Giant fans are livid with the literal selection, which they kind of are. I think they're really turned off by what is an incredibly aggressive and, like, this very demeaning approach and delivery by Gettleman. Giant fans aren't feeling Gettleman at all, their GM. And I got to be honest with you, Jim, I don't blame him. I don't think he's doing a good job at all, at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brandon, what was more confusing, taking Daniel Jones at 6 or the presser afterwards explain that pick?
Oh, jeez. I mean, Jim, can you have a more, you know, listen, we all, you're a legend, it happens to you. Sometimes you just forget somebody's name. When you talk for 3 hours, you might get a stat wrong, you might get a name wrong, but good God almighty, Dave, can you stand up at the press conference and at least project an ounce of positivity for the guy that you just drafted, that he's the right guy? I mean, can you, and Shermer's looking at him like, what the hell did I get myself into with this? This is a clown show. I mean, it was really the imagery for the Giants. And this is what's ironic, and I think I mentioned this last time when I was on with you, Jim. And by the way, we need to make this happen a little more regularly. This is becoming a good spot here on the Rome Show.
I can do this. I can do this. I can do that.
I remember saying to you, I said, hey, Jim, what's starting to happen now is that the Giants are now tapping into the DNA of the way the Jets used to be, and the Jets are now tapping into the DNA of the way the Giants used to be. And let's face it, as a Jets fan, I'm cool with that. But as you know, as just somebody who's from New York and breathes, you know, and my whole life, both teams, because that's what you do, I don't want to see the Giants go sideways. It's one thing to go 6-10. It's another thing to be 6-10 and seemingly be directionless. And right now, I don't know what GPS the Giants are using, but it's probably an expired app. It's not a good one.
Brandon Tierney joining me for a few more moments, and his show is coming up with Tiki right after this one. Brandon, when you and I spoke last month, one more thought about the Giants. In the wake of the Odell Beckham trade, one of the things that came up around that time was the number of hits and the wear and tear on Saquon Barkley without either offensive line help or more weapons on offense. We know this guy could be a once-in-a-generation back, but how much of a concern is that and the amount of abuse physically that he might take going forward?
It's a huge concern, and what I believe is even more worrisome is that you have a coach now, and let's face it, we don't know if Shermer's the right guy. We don't know definitively that he's the wrong guy. We just don't know that. But he's in a place where he is beginning to, well, I believe the opinions are already shaping, and I don't think they're overly positive, and I would agree with that, to be fair. But it's not swallowing him up yet. But it could if this season goes sideways fast. And when you're a coach, it's all about self-preservation. Because let's be honest, Jim, you don't give a damn about the 2023 draft equity. You don't give a damn about 7 years of Saquon Barkley at the age of 29 is tapped out like Chris Johnson was a couple of years ago for the Titans after they abused him. Or, I mean, there's a litany of examples. We've seen this a million times. And Tiki talks about the finite number of hits every running back has. It's a real thing. So Pat Shermer is there trying to save his job. And I understand this, and I don't begrudge him. And to save his job, you win games. And really, the way they're set up, the only way to win games, especially if Eli's playing quarterback, is to dump it off in the flats to Saquon Barkley and hope he makes 10 or 11 people miss.
And keep pounding him over and over and over again, because that does give you your best chance to win. He is a member of the CBS family. He is the host of Tiki and Tierney. It's coming up right after this on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. Remember, he's also an NFL analyst on the other pregame show on CBS Sports Network and an Emmy Award winner. Brandon, my man, have a great weekend. We'll do it again soon, and it's always good to have you on this show. Have a great show today.
You are a legend, and I always appreciate the invite. I'll never turn it down. Thanks again, Jimmy.
Hey, now. As a pro at keeping you clones in line and interviewing the right people in sports, here is some simple advice that can help you. When you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. When it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So we talked about the draft, and the day of the NFL draft is supposed to be a lot of fun. It's supposed to be about guys realizing their dreams. And it actually is a pretty awesome thing to see. You got one player after another in tears when they get on stage, which I love, because it's the realization of all that hard work, all the sacrifices by that player, his family, his friends, everybody, and it all paid off. On top of that, you've got the reactions from the fan bases. They're always way over the top, way too extreme, and that's actually fun too. So is trying to figure out what certain teams were doing, what certain teams were thinking. I mean, it's all supposed to be a blast. It's all supposed to be so much fun, which is why I've got no interest in ruining that party by getting serious. Like, we all like to have fun on Friday, too. Even the guys on the other side of the glass, no names mentioned. Hawk, just want to have a good old time on Friday. It's Friday, man. Let's keep it light. Let's just look at my porn stash. Let's have a good time. I understand all that. That's why I start Fridays off with a deck of yeah. You want to have fun. You want Friday to be a little bit lighter. And I want to. I really do. Except right now I can't. And I can't because of Tyreek Hill. Now, it's kind of easy for Tyreek Hill to get lost in the commotion of yesterday. But don't let that happen. We can't let that happen. There is a reason why I have not talked very much about Tyreek Hill on this show. And why I've always been very reluctant to hype him as a football player. We know the guy can play. But I've always been reluctant to hype him because before Tyreek Hill was drafted, he pled guilty to domestic assault and battery by strangulation. According to the police report, he punched his fiance in the face, he choked her, and he punched her in the stomach. His fiance was 8 weeks pregnant with their son at that time. We knew that. Fast forward to last month. Police go to Hill's home in Johnson County, Kansas, twice last month. Police took two reports on those visits, one for battery and one for child abuse and neglect. The Kansas City Star reported on March 15th that an incident at Hill's home had left the three-year-old child with a broken arm. Then Wednesday, Johnson County DA Stephen M. Howe said charges would not be filed against Hill or his fiance, not because they did not believe that a crime had been committed, but because they could not clearly establish who committed the crime. Quote, "This office has reviewed all the evidence and has declined to file charges against Tyreek Hill and Crystal Espinal. We are deeply troubled by the situation. We believe a crime has occurred. However, the evidence in this case doesn't establish who committed a crime," end quote. Then yesterday, KCTV 5 aired audio reportedly of a conversation between Hill and Espinal. The TV station says the audio is part of an 11-minute long conversation that was recorded while the couple was walking through the Dubai International Airport. The Kansas City Star has not independently confirmed that it's Hill and Espinal on the record, but the TV station says that it is. Here are some of the excerpts from Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports. I'm not going to play them because of the content, but I'll read a few of them. But be warned, it's truly disturbing. Quote, "What do you do when the child is bad? You make him open up his arms and you punch him in the chest," Espinal said. "You do use a belt. That's sad." Hill said, "Even my mama says you use a belt." So just so we're clear, that's allegedly Hill's fiance allegedly accusing him of punching a three-year-old child in the chest. Here's something else. Quote, "He kept crying because he was scared," Espinal said. "He was terrified. And what? You grabbed onto him somehow? Or he fell? One of the two?" Quote, "I didn't do nothing," Hill said. "That's sad, bro." "Then why does he say daddy did it?" Espinal replied. "He says daddy does a lot of things," Hill said. "A child is not going to lie about what happened to his arm," Espinal said. And here's one more. Quote, "He's terrified of you," Espinal said. Quote, "You need to be terrified of me too, bitch," Hill said. Stop on that for a minute. Let's all just sit on that for one moment. Again, it has not been confirmed that it's Hill and Espinal on the recording. But what we're talking about is somebody allegedly punching a three-year-old in the chest, somebody doing something that resulted in a three-year-old with a broken arm, and Hill allegedly telling his fiance, quote, "You need to be terrified of me too, bitch," end quote. The Chiefs, for their part, said last night that he has been barred from all team activities until more is known about that tape. But let's be real about this. If it's true, the Chiefs cannot possibly be surprised. Seriously, you can't. If a guy pleads guilty when he allegedly punches his pregnant fiance in the face and stomach and strangles her, and then you draft that guy, you cannot be surprised if he's then accused of child abuse and accused of threatening his fiance. I mean, this is such an emotional issue. When we're talking about matters of domestic violence and child abuse, it is incredibly emotional. And there are the usual caveats about fair investigations, fair trials. And we don't know if that audio is real or not. We don't know what happened in the home that resulted in a three-year-old with a broken arm. Except that we know that the DA believes that a crime was committed. But let's keep this simple now. Unless the Chiefs find out that that audio was doctored and fabricated, they should cut this guy immediately. This is not a matter of giving him a second chance. He already had that. Kansas City can't say they were caught off guard by this. They can't say that they didn't know that this was a possibility. They knew it when they drafted him. And they drafted him anyway. I know he's talented. I know he's really talented. I know all about the arguments that get trucked out at this point about people deserving a second chance, that he's grown, that he's changed, all of that, and that the team will want to investigate. And I know that football teams are all about winning first and everything else second. But somebody take a stand. Somebody somewhere in this league take a damn stand. Take a stand. Howard Beck joins us. Howard, what's going on?
Romy, what's happening? That intro never gets old. I love it.
No, you either. You either. It's good to have you back. All right, so you had Daryl Morey on your podcast, which dropped earlier today. I want to get to that in one moment. But before we do that, you've got a piece up right now about Russell Westbrook, and one Western Conference executive told you, quote, he's a transcendent player, but I'm not convinced he's a transcendent winner, end of quote. What do you make of that comment, and does that feel accurate to you?
Well, and it's interesting, Rome, like, it's not just him. It's a lot of people around the league. We've heard commentators weigh in on this. I quoted Brendan Haywood in that story. Charles Barkley said some things on TNT the other night. There's just this kind of growing sense after watching Russell Westbrook for the last 3 years, post-Kevin Durant, that Russell Westbrook, while an incredible athlete and an incredible competitor and, you know, just a phenomenon, as a basketball entertainer on some level, right? Like, we watch the game because we love to be thrilled and entertained and blown away, and he does all those things. But is it translating to wins at a high enough level? When you talk about MVPs, and he was a couple years ago, you're not talking about a guy who's just really good and puts up numbers and is just fun to watch. You're talking about guys who are so elite that they lift their team and they make an impression at the time of the season when it matters most, and that's the playoffs. He has not been able to do that. And when he didn't accomplish anything without Durant and no other stars on the team, it was heralded as just him wheeling the Thunder into the playoffs at all. But he has had Paul George for the last two postseasons now, and the results are almost identical. Out in the first round, out in five games. And so at some point you have to step back and say, it's an impressive brand of basketball, but is it a winning brand of basketball? And that's a fair question to ask. He doesn't shoot well from three, we know that. He had a better mid-range game at one time. That has seemingly eroded. And his best asset is that he's just impossible to stop when he's going to the basket, but he's not getting there enough and not converting enough now. And he is 30 and coming up on 31 later this year. And it's natural for guys, especially guys who relied on their athleticism most, to start to show some erosion at that time. That's everybody. That's not, you know, picking on Russell Westbrook. That's everybody.
Howard Beck, my guest. Howard, hearing you respond that way makes me think this. He is 11 years in. So can he change at this point? Or even worse, is it possible that his best days are behind him?
Well, one of his defining traits, obviously, is just this intensity and with it a sort of a hard-headedness. And what makes him great is what also possibly is his weakness. That doesn't mean he can't change. Like, I will be the last one to say, all right, this is just who he is, and you know, that'll be his downfall. Well, it could be. But listen, everybody at some point can evolve if they, you know, decide to step back and reflect a little bit on it, whether that's finally figuring out how to fix his jump shot, 11 years in, unlikely, but not impossible, or whether that's recalibrating his game and just taking fewer bad shots or fewer shots, period, and using that incredible athleticism and explosion to break down defenses and then just pass it to whoever's open. I mean, there are other ways for him to improve at this stage, but I think, you know, in his press conference yesterday, I think was a indication that maybe he's not going to improve. He's not going to evolve because it was mostly defensive. It was mostly just, if you're criticizing me, you're a hater and I don't care about the critics. Well, that's fine. I mean, I don't think anybody should let, you know, criticism get to them in that regard. I mean, but you got to consider whether the criticism is valid, and it's not coming just from people like me. You know, my opinion doesn't matter, but guys who played the game, guys who scout the game, executives, coaches, a lot of people believe the same thing, that he needs to recalibrate. And so you'd hope he would take that to heart.
We'll see. Howard Beck joining us. All right, Howard, so mentioning Daryl Morey, game six of the Warriors and Clippers is tonight. The winner of that series does get the Rockets. How does Daryl Morey feel right about now?
Well, it's funny because Clint Capella the other night, after they clinched, said, I want the Warriors. We got unfinished business, basically. And Chris Paul immediately chastised him and said, you're going to end up on Bleacher Report tomorrow, which, hey, thanks for the shout-out, Chris Paul. Appreciate that.
Right.
I asked Daryl about that, and, you know, he kind of sees it both ways, as Daryl would. And he the first thing he said is that, and, you know, obviously he relies on a lot of, you know, numbers, algorithms, everything else, that the Warriors are still like a 99% chance to win this series, I think. So he's expecting the Warriors. And he's fine with that. I did ask him, look, in the abstract, would you rather have a team that presents less of a challenge? I'm not trying to, you know, deride the Clippers, but a team that presents less because they were not as winning of a team? Or do you always want the route that in which you're proving yourself by beating the defending champs and a team that beat you before? I think where he finally ended up after a long kind of drawn-out answer was that, yeah, he just kind of preferred just to get there. Like, I don't think Daryl cares whether they beat the Warriors or not. He just wants to get to the finals. He just wants to win a championship.
So the Rockets have made no secret of the fact that they want them. I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's not like they're going to hang an asterisk on that team if they win a championship and they don't go through Golden State to get there, or maybe some people might mentally. Deep down, though, what do you think the Rockets think of the Warriors? For instance, is there a feeling of fundamental respect, or is there a level of hatred?
I think there's, like, this is one of those, like, you know, kind of still developing rivalries. I don't know that there's enough there to say that it's outright that kind of hatred that you're talking about, but I think, assuming that they meet again soon here, and I think they will, I think we're going to get there. I think we're getting there. And, you know, there have been some things said over time, and you know it's going to be a physical series. You know that they're going to be trying to get into each other's heads. You know that the Rockets were pretty proud of the way that they defended the Warriors last year and pushed them to Game 7, even without Chris Paul the last couple of games. The Rockets absolutely believe that they could have beaten them if they'd had Chris Paul. And, of course, the Warriors think that it might have been over even sooner if they hadn't lost Iguodala along the way. I think it's coming, Jim. I think that when we see these two teams meet again here coming up in this next week, we're going to see that this rivalry is at another level.
Howard Beck joining us for a few more moments. Now, Howard, the Clippers, first of all, credit to the Clippers, right? This is a team that was allegedly headed to the lottery after that Tobias Harris deal, and now they're pushing Golden State to a sixth game. That said, and credit to them, period. That said, Golden State is in a brawl that they never thought they'd be in. When you look at Golden State right now, do they look bored to you? Do they look tired to you? What is it?
I think it's a mistake to call it boredom at this stage, right? Like, during the season, when they'd go through these little slumps and, you know, these little mini crises, we'd say, you know, they're either bored or they're sick of each other, or it's a grind and they've been at this for 5 years running now. That's fine. You know, those, like, that's not a fake thing. It's not just an excuse. That's a real thing during the season. At this time of year, and granted it's only the first round and there are rounds to go, I don't want to give them that out now. This is when they were supposed to actually pull it all together and look like themselves. And they have at times, even in the one game that we point to as their ultimate collapse, blowing a 31-point lead. Well, they also built a 31-point lead. And they recovered from that loss pretty well by spanking the Clippers the next game. And, yeah, no one expected them to necessarily be this far into the series against an eighth seed. But the Clippers aren't your average eighth seed. And the Warriors, you know, look, their bench isn't great. Their big man rotation took a big hit when they lost Cousins. And you know, they're, you know, Andrew Bogut just returned like, what, 3 weeks ago or something? And he's now playing a critical role for them. So I think there's just some other fundamental things there. Plus, their chemistry has been kind of weird all season. And I think we can't underestimate the fact that there is some aging going on here, too, especially with key bench members like Iguodala and Sean Livingston.
Howard Beck is my guest. Howard, before you go, one last thought. I've got to ask you this. When Magic Johnson announced that he was quitting, he said he wanted to get back to tweeting. And yesterday he tweeted, quote, "The truth will always come to light," end quote. A little cryptic from Irv. What do you make of that tweet?
I have no idea where to begin on that one, Jim. I mean,
take your time, my man. Take your time.
There's, you know, it could be a thousand different things. You got to assume it was something about the politics going on in the front office with the Lakers. And I think there was some report yesterday about some things that were said. I don't know. I'm assuming it's not about Luke Walton necessarily, but who knows, maybe. I mean, there's so much out there right now that it could be. I don't want to speculate. I don't want to assume what it might be. I guess we just have to wait for Magic's next tweet.
With the first pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select
the week that was...
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a great weekend. Let me start with Western Conference playoff action. What do you do if you're Klay Thompson? You're not having the production that you normally have. You go play beach volleyball, and then you jump into the ocean.
Yeah! I'm just going to jump in the ocean, reset my mind, and it worked.
If Klay Thompson is anywhere near an ocean, a lake, a pond, even a large puddle, any body of water, look the hell out.
The ocean lets us know just how small we really are.
Bodie got his ass kicked by the Pacific Ocean. Dwayne Haskins is my guest. He's getting ready for the NFL draft.
I've been breaking down film since I was about 10 years old.
What?
That's something that I enjoy. That's something that I have pride in. So, you know, making sure that I prepare for anything that I could see out there on the field.
What are you going to do when you graduate?
I have no idea. I'll figure it out.
I don't know of any athlete I've ever spoken to that was quite like Pat Tillman. But I just want to acknowledge how different an athlete and person that Pat Tillman was. 15 years ago, he was killed. R.I.P. Pat.
Phenomenal, man. I'm going to get you a talk show, all right?
Cool.
Tom Haverstroh joining us for a few more moments.
I think they're drinking their own Kool-Aid in Lakerland.
Oh, yeah.
Nepotism, cronyism, it's all the worst stuff that you have in management.
Hawks stash.
I wasn't trying to draw attention to myself. I was actually trying to blend in.
You went from looking like a porn star to a murderer.
His silly rabbit.
His what?
What? What did you just say?
His silly rabbit.
His silly rabbit?
Yes.
Is that what he calls you?
No. That's I call you... myself.
Hey, V, there is no self-glossing.
The zookeeper.
Actually, Romy, I'm known as the ass.
Manny Cheeseburger over here.
His silly rabbit.
Welcome to the party, V. Yeah, the 2019 Giants, and they better be the 72 Dolphins. This guy's going to look bad. And that aroma that he smells will not be the smell of a Super Bowl.
It smells of B.O.
Paul DeYoung. I went to Eagle River.
You're very close.
Probably some good ice fishing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and you want to get yourself an electric auger.
How about beer?
Maybe it's a fireball to warm you up.
Maybe I can hit you up for some more advice.
Anytime. Makes you look to draft another quarterback.
It's coming off like, hey, I'm sorry if you misinterpreted what I said. It's just the business of football. Maybe you don't get that. Hey, Don.
Hey,
the guys playing football understand the business of football.
There's a lot of envy, just jealousy.
They know exactly what you're saying.
Chlorophyll.
Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
I want to be the best in the world. That's how I feel. I want to be better than Deion. Deion was my favorite player to watch. I went to a couple of his camps. I even told him I'm going to be better than
Deion Sanders hot dog.
He's the buddy, too.
Man, my man, Bunny, is putting his combinations together beautifully. Imagine getting beat up by a dude dressed as a rabbit. The humiliation of that alone would make me day drink. My man was out cold. Terry Francona is our guest.
Jim, thanks for having me back. I always look forward to it. A couple of my kids were in town for my birthday, and my oldest daughter. I rolled over in the morning, and she said I had an M&M stuck on my right nipple. It happens.
Yeah, it happens.
Not exaggerated.
Hey, is Ezekiel Elliott getting a tattoo of himself the same as Justified getting a tattoo of Sarah Jessica Parker?
Get some respect on that, dope. No, Bob. That's not the same thing. The sixth... Yeah, Alvin, you're not helping him. You're hurting him, man.
Down dribble, sidestep, and raise up.
That's a superstar series from Dame, but that was a legendary moment. That wave was iconic. Damian Lillard, my guest.
My confidence in the shots I take comes from me knowing that I put the time in and me being comfortable in it because I've done it over and over and over. I think in the other part is just my upbringing where you had to be able to hold your own and it just develops toughness and confidence.
It's a bad shot. I care what anybody says. That's a bad shot.
Hey, PG, it's a bad take. You know, maybe back in the day, but not now. Not the way guys shoot it. Not the way that guy shoots it.
Me
you missed a
bad shot.
Jordan Palmer joining us. You're working with Drew Locke.
He has been the man since he was little. He's also a handsome dude who can talk and he's got some swag to him. He's a very fluid but twitchy athlete.
This could be a 5-minute major.
Brutal penalty kill, and now it's over.
He scores!
I don't want to say the refs cost the team a game. I never want to say that. If that call's not made, Vegas probably wins that game. The whole thing sucks. Josh Bell joining us.
I was a guy that wasn't living on the barrel. I was a guy altering my swing to make contact. Swings and misses are okay in this game. It's being able to do damage.
I'm like, bro, aren't they going in to get the baby? Isn't that happening? He's like, yep. I said, then why are you blowing me up about the draft? He's like, ha-ha, draft day. Bro, are you texting me from the delivery room? What's going on? Are you like in your scrubs?
Is it any wonder that James Kelly's wife is having a C-section? You've seen that cracker's forehead.
The 5-year anniversary of Self Gloss Friday.
Hey, Rome. It's actually not Barry. My friends call me the
Barracuda.
Frosty the Sasquatch had a hairy, fluffy ball.
Daniel Jones.
I was in full-blown love.
That's quite a visual.
Damn, Dave. Glad you think so. Because the way the rest of the world is reacting, they may as well be burning Manhattan to the ground. Brandon Tierney is my guest.
Romy, always good to be back on with the legend. I think the Giants are a clown show. The bottom line is that their plan is sloppy.
Screw all the mock drafts, and mock drafts be damned. And you know...
Enchilada Eggs Benedict. Yeah, that sounds exactly like Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, my goodness.
Not tragic to die doing what you love.
That was a life touchdown.
Thanks so much for having me. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Dingle Bomb.
Jim, I'm a big fan, man. Anytime.
Hopefully more to come.
Prescription strength, smack up.
I'm ready.
Hashtag unfollow.
I have no idea where to begin.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Good night now!